Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is wonderful to have your company once again for another episode of the show. Now, many of us understand the value of systemizing the business. We understand that it gives us leverage. We understand that it gives us consistency. We understand that if we want to adopt best practice, we need to capture our intellectual property, our thoughts, and document them. What some people may know about, but many won't know about, is the concept of international standards, ISO, whatever number we're talking about. And my guest today, Mel Blackmore, is an absolute expert at ISO standards. She's lived and breathed ISO standards for many, many years. And what's really interesting is her ability to take these standards and make them really relevant to small and medium enterprises to capture the best thinking and to implement best practice. Sometimes people mistakenly think that ISO standardization is really for large corporations or big government bodies, and perhaps 20 or 30 years ago that might have been true, but there's so much flexibility with this ISO standardization that it allows small businesses to tap into the wisdom, the knowledge, and the structure that these standards provide. It's a really interesting podcast, and I know that you'll get a lot from it. Now, if you want to find out more about Mel and the work that she does, I'm going to encourage you to go and check her out at blackmoresuk.com or head across to her brand new platform called isologyhub.com or blackmoresuk.com. There's a bazillion different resources there, heaps of things you can read, heaps of things you can digest, a podcast, other materials as well. But in this conversation today, we cover a lot of territory, but do, as always, have a pen and paper handy. You're going to get a lot of really useful things to take into your practice to standardize, get some leverage, adopt best practice for you and your business. So here's Mel. Mel Blackmore, thank you so much for getting up so early in the morning to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast all the way from the UK. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute thrill and pleasure to have you here. I can't wait to get into our conversation. Mel, you run an organization called Blackmores, and not to be confused with the vitamin company, which we all know and are familiar with, your expertise is in standards and particularly around making sure that there's best practice in place for businesses to follow so that they can do their business to the best of their ability. I'm curious to ask, because as someone who's been through a standardization process when I was in the Navy, there's not many people I know that kind of grow up thinking, that's what I'm going to do when I grow up. How did you find your way into that kind of work? It's fascinating and interesting, but I'm curious, what was the journey?
Yeah, that's interesting because I hadn't even heard of it as a profession when I was back in school or even college. But when I left school, I had a spell working, and then I went travelling. I actually went over to Australia. So I'd love to go back there again sometime, over to Muckinbooden. Mm-hmm. played for a hockey team over there. But yeah, when I came back, I was really keen. I had a thirst for knowledge around business. And one of the modules on my degree was on total quality management. And I don't know, for some reason, it just resonated with me. It was like the penny drop. And I just thought, well, why wouldn't all businesses have a structure in place for running their business so that they can deliver the highest possible quality standards? And so later on, I went on and did a postgraduate course in total quality management. And I later had a family. I was working in London. But when the children came along, I actually thought, wouldn't it be great if I could share my knowledge on best practice and implement ISO standards for small businesses? Because at the time I was in the corporate world. And actually at the time, my father-in-law, who had a business, asked if I knew anything about this ISO 9001. And I said, actually, yes, yeah. And he said, well, would you mind giving me a hand with it? And it was really refreshing working with an SME and being able to make such significant changes. Not in the way that they delivered their services directly, but in terms of having that structure in place, having objectives, KPIs, really clear controls. So everything was really transparent and clearly communicated. So yeah, that's where it all began. I went back to my manager at the time. I was working in London, and I actually suggested to him that they outsource their quality management. And my boss at the time said, "Oh, that's all very well and good, Melanie, but we don't want to lose you." And I said, well, actually, you'll be my first client, Richard. And that was where it all began. So it was the fairly low risk way into setting up my own business at the time. My husband was really supportive. We had two young children at the time, and it felt as though that was going to be the best work-life balance for us, because it meant that I could still do something I was really passionate about doing, which was helping businesses to improve, but still be a mum whilst the children were small.
Fantastic. Mel, one of the things that I think a lot of business owners, particularly dentists or small to medium enterprise business owners, might be thinking is, aren't standards for the big guys? Aren't they for the multinational corporations? Isn't that what we see on government agencies or large corporations that employ thousands or tens of thousands of people? But what I'm understanding from our conversation so far is that it's really applicable to every business, irrespective of the size. So could we just talk a little bit about the relevance of standards from the SME point of view? Because listening to this particular podcast, I want to make sure that the people, as they're driving their car on the way to work, they kind of go, actually, there's going to be something really useful in here, because I think this is going to be how every business can improve what they do, can have more consistency. But could you just speak to that point for a second?
Sure. I would have agreed with you on the image of the standards being really for the larger organizations, if it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. But the standards are really applicable to any size organization, and we've implemented standards for all different types of sectors. And if I give you an example of probably one of the smallest companies we implemented three ISO standards for. It was a guy who just started a business, and he had worked for a large air conditioning maintenance organization, and he wanted to set up his own business. All of that information was in his head. He was an extremely knowledgeable guy, extremely experienced, but he knew that he didn't want to work 24 hours a day. He wanted to be able to create a business model, a structure, so that he had a scalable model for growth. And I knew this chap. He came to me and he said, "Look, Mel, I know that you deal with these ISO standards. I could really do with them for my business, but I'm not sure if the business is too small." And we had a brief chat, and within about 5 minutes, it was really clear that he needed some type of system for operating his business so that he could hand that over to the next employee coming in. And that's what we did. And we implemented the quality standard 9001. Environmental management was really key in that sector, and so was health and safety. So we implemented all three ISO standards as an integrated business management system. So long gone are the days where you need a separate manual for this and a manual for that. And everything was online. That was probably about 10 years ago. And now that's a multi-million pound organization. It's still not a huge organization. It doesn't need to be, but it gives him a great life for both him and his family and for all of his employees now. So, yeah, that's a great example on how a small business has grown through implementing and raising their standards.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing that, because I went through standards 20, 30 years ago, whenever it was that I was in the Navy, a long time ago now, and we were speaking off air about how that process has changed dramatically since then. And I think it's good that we address the small business situation, because as you say, three standards for that particular organization have really helped propel them to greater success. And for everyone listening to this podcast, most people listening to this podcast are really interested in creating a business that does scale, a business that does free them up, helps them get what's in their head onto paper or some sort of electronic form. I should say paper's a euphemism for pretty much documentation of everything. But in any case, I love the notion around that. And I guess the question that I wanted to ask you around that is, there were three particular standards that were useful for that small air conditioning business. And obviously he had other operational processes that perhaps didn't fall under a standard. But how many standards are there, and how do you decide which are the ones that are going to be most relevant for an individual business?
That's a great question. There are actually thousands of standards, but just to be clear, that there are standards for producing a fire extinguisher. So the standards that we deal with on products are actually for businesses. And I'd say about 70% of the businesses that we work with are SMEs. So in terms of the most popular standards globally, 9001 is still the go-to standard. And that's a standard that's requested in tenders as well. So if you're looking at contracts with other stakeholders, then that can be a requirement. But then the other standards that are really popular are information security standards, such as ISO 27001. Now, a business doesn't necessarily need to be certified to that standard, because obviously certification is a cost, because that's the way that you can demonstrate your credibility, trust and confidence to stakeholders. But you don't necessarily need to go that far. You can actually have a great system in place which is aligned to that best practice. And this covers everything from recruiting a new person, induction, antivirus software, cybersecurity. It covers a whole raft of different controls that a business really should have in place to protect their assets, including obviously their information assets, but it does include people as well. Anyway, I won't go off on a on a tangent about information security, but that's definitely the standard that we've seen grow in demand over the last few years. And then obviously environmental and sustainability standards. Here in Europe, a lot of organisations are looking to be carbon neutral. There are targets in place. And businesses are wondering, well, what, you know, where do we begin with that? And again, the standards provide that structure. And of course, there's health and safety as well. But quite often in an industry, there are sector-specific standards as well. So there is a standard for cosmetics manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So that's a GMP. So we have some dentistry clients that actually not necessarily produce the actual teeth whitening product, but they import that and they deal with the packaging and distribution in their country. So that's a standard that helps them to provide a structure for managing that type of business.
It's really interesting. I know we didn't want to go down the tangent of the information security, but I'm going to go down that tangent and hopefully ask you a few questions about that, because information security is something that we as dentists deal with all day, every day. We're looking after people's medical histories, looking after their financial data, potentially going as they process their transactions and so on and so forth. So there's some very sensitive data that we have in our possession. And I'm just wondering, I don't necessarily want to go through the standard blow by blow and give us an overview, but if you could give us a couple of things to consider around information management, obviously that tie back into the standard, what would be a couple of the highlight points that businesses, particularly dentists, need to be considering around the information management that as they think about best practice?
Well, just think about your client's journey. So from when a new client joins your dental practice, what information do they need to give you? Okay. Also, just think not just in terms of remote data, but also think of physical data as well. So from the moment they walk through your door, CCTV, that's capturing them initially. Okay. So what do you do with your CCTV? When they provide information, including payment details, medical information, personal contact information, okay, so how are they providing that information to you? Is it online? If it is online, how is that protected? So in terms of protection, obviously you've got your physical assets like laptops, PCs, things like that. So you might want to consider encryption software for your hardware, such as BitLocker. But then obviously, in some cases, it could be a little bit like locking your front door but leaving your back door wide open if your data is not secure on wherever that's hosted. So that could be on a physical server or it might be in the cloud, in which case you just need to verify, you know, have they got ISO 27001 in place? What controls have your suppliers got? Because that's quite often where the greatest risk is. And then when somebody unfortunately moves on and leaves your dental practice for whatever reason, you need to look at the information that you're holding on them and check in terms of wherever you're located in the world, what are the rules around retention of data? Because in Europe, we have the General Data Protection Regulations, GDPR, which some of your listeners may have heard of.
And I know it.
That also includes controls for the right to have access to your data. Okay, so there are lots of rights now that individuals have to get access to their own personal data that an organization might hold on them. So you just need to think about accessibility as well.
Okay. And I guess one of the things that we spoke a little bit about offline as well as GDPR, so it's primarily a European standard, but we never know exactly what servers are hosting our information, where those servers might be around the world. So even if we're using something here in Australia, if our cloud storage is somewhere in Europe, we need to make sure that that particular storage system is GDPR compliant. And therefore, yeah, we might not even be aware we have an obligation to fulfill is essentially what I want to make sure we are clear about. Is that fair enough?
Yes, it is. A really good idea to find out where your data is hosted and how that is protected, and whether the country that's hosting that data has any regulations in place and if they're complying with them. And I think that's probably why ISO 27001 has been so popular, because it does provide a holistic approach to information security that covers every aspect, not just commercial data, but personal data that your clients give you. Oh, sorry, I was just going to mention there is a specific standard on data privacy, which is ISO 27701.
Okay. I just love the fact you can reel these numbers off. That speaks, you know, when you're speaking in numbers, you're speaking my love language. When we start talking numbers, I'm a number nerd. But one of the things that I was just thinking about there, just, you know, quite candidly, I hadn't even thought about what CCTV footage might, what the requirements around that are, and the fact that that's personal information. But it makes sense. And I think a lot of people go through their day-to-day operations, not really considering what obligations they have. And of course, we've only just spoken about one particular standard. And of course, we've kind of gone down that rabbit hole a little bit, but there are many, many standards. And you've spoken about the environmental management systems and so on and so forth. But what I wanted to ask you is, when it comes to running a business, one of the things that prudent business managers think about all the time is risk management. How do I mitigate risk? How do I identify risk? And so I wondered if you could talk about standards as a way of risk mitigation, risk identification. What have you seen other business owners use these standards for as it relates to risk?
Yeah, in some sectors, it's used to reduce insurance premiums because it's a way of proving that they have got a solid system in place to manage risk. And I guess the confidence for the insurance companies come from the fact that it's not you just saying that you've got a risk management system in place or you've taken a risk-based approach, but it's actually an independent third-party certification body verifying that. Okay, because we can all say, we're carbon neutral, or we're very much focused on health and safety and we've got a commitment to that, but how do you actually prove it? So that's, one of the key differences. But interestingly, over the last few years, the standards have all changed so that they all have a common framework. So regardless of which standard you're implementing, there are the same common elements in every single ISO system. And it all begins with risks and opportunities.
Okay.
And quite often where there is an opportunity, there is a risk.
Yes.
And vice versa. So that's an area that we begin with when we start looking to implement an ISO standard. So some of the questions that we will ask are, what are the top three things that would keep you awake at night? And then you can break that down by different functions. So if you've got a small business, quite often you're wearing a lot of different caps, whether that's sales and marketing, finance, operations. So there will be elements of risk across all of those. And it's a case of taking a step back and looking at where your most significant risks are, and then looking at addressing those risks and mitigating the risks. And once you've captured that, you can actually then document that and communicate that with the rest of the team as well.
Okay. Really interesting to understand that there's a standardization of the standards, which is very meta standard, so to speak. You know, the layout and the format begins with the risks and the opportunities. With lots of small businesses now moving towards systemizing their operations, people understanding the leverage that comes from systems, and the leverage that comes from having a team that can follow those systems and implement them really, really well. One of the things that I remember when we went through ISO 9001 in the Navy, we went through a really rigorous documentation process, and it was great. And at the time, to be fair, I don't think I appreciated it as much as I do now. But one of the things that I remember quite vividly in other areas, I was working at the Naval Hospital at the time, and obviously we were just one department within the hospital. But I remember each of the departments going through this process in their own way. But once it was done, once certification was achieved, and I know we're not talking about having to go through the certification process for small businesses, but I wondered whether you had any thoughts about how to make sure the standards or the processes are indeed followed. Because it's one thing to document everything. It's another thing for people to actually follow those documents. Have you got any thoughts around that?
Yeah, that's a great point that you've brought up, because I think that's one of the greatest challenges for many businesses in terms of they might have a great system in place, but if nobody's aware of them, then they're not going to follow them. So communication is really key. So whenever we've worked with clients, we always have a great emphasis on the launch. So, you know, imagine you're actually launching a new product or service externally. Think of it like that internally. You really want to create a buzz about it to drive momentum and enthusiasm, because at the end of the day, it's their management system. So they need to be empowered to take responsibility for it. It's not just one person's job creating the documentation, you know, thinking that's it. In some respects, it's an organization's DNA. It's how they work. And that's a bespoke system just for that particular business. So it's really important that everybody follows that, because at the end of the day, your way of working is your magic sauce. It's what makes you unique. It's your USP. And once you've captured that, that means you've got a scalable model for growth as well. Because I think one of the greatest challenges is getting that information out of the business owner's head, out of the other manager's heads within the organization. You know, once you've actually got that down, you've then got that scalable model for growth.
So if I understand you correctly, then the person who'd be documenting the process, the person who'd be creating the system or going through that particular standard, may be the business owner, but it may be the person who's currently doing the role as in the current position. Is that a fair assessment? Is it always one person that, you know, oversees the implementation of this process, or is there work that's allocated to the actual people fulfilling those roles?
So typically there is a project sponsor. So it's the person that's actually endorsing it and that's supporting it. But typically the best way of working is to bring in process owners. So you've got champions within the business. So if you've got a receptionist that's in charge of the main office function, it's their responsibility to help to document those and to be responsible for making sure that they're compliant. Now, quite often they work with a consultancy firm, you know, like Blackmores, or have some online solutions. Like, we've got a new online membership portal now where people can get access to that support 24/7. But they are really instrumental in the success of making sure that that system's been effectively implemented and followed. So, yeah, they have that sense of ownership that it is their process. And so when a business evolves and changes, so you might be offering new services, you might be growing, that's absolutely fine. But that process owner will be able to review and refine the process as the business evolves.
This makes such logical sense to me. I understand the process of systemizing things and documenting things, and I understand the leverage that comes from that. I understand why people do it. What I'd like to ask you is, why do so many small businesses not do this?
Yeah, I think some organizations think that it's quite bureaucratic, it's costly. And I think, you know, that was the case a number of years ago when the standards were very prescriptive. But I think now that they're based on risks and opportunities, an organization has carte blanche to create their own bespoke management system. But the standard is there to provide that guidance and structure for them. I think in some cases, it's a lack of awareness of the ISO standards. So in some sectors, there are standards, like in the events industry. So there was a sustainable event management standard that was introduced, and that's really taken off since the Olympics London 2012, which is actually where it gets the number of the standard from.
There you go.
So now you've got fashion houses like Gucci using it at their fashion event. So yeah, so they've actually really embraced that specific standard, and there are actually standards in the industry. So it's interesting to see where that's going to go in terms of looking at sector specific standards.
Do you think there'll ever come a time where there will be an accreditation process where in some industries, and maybe this will never be the case, but whether, you know, if you want to operate a particular kind of business in a regulated environment, whether it's health or food production or something of that nature, that in order to be able to operate, people need to be compliant with the standard and to have demonstrated compliance with the standard? Is that something that's going to happen, do you think, down the track from a public safety perspective?
Yeah, I think we've certainly seen it in Europe with energy management, because some organisations will actually be fined if they are not reporting on their energy and carbon emissions. And obviously, many organisations have made a pledge to be carbon neutral by either 2030 or 2050, depending on where you're located in the world. So I wouldn't be surprised if we do see these standards actually becoming more mandatory in certain areas. But I think it's almost like an unwritten rule in certain sectors with standards like information security. That's something that is very much driven by client demand.
Yeah, and I think, I guess, for those businesses that are driven to be top of their field, best in class, they're going to embrace that voluntarily, of course, whereas others may be dragged to the table a little more reluctantly, and that might be part of it. So I was just curious to see if there are any moves around those particular areas of public safety where there might be some sort of compliance forced upon certain sectors of the economy. If people get this right, if a small business owner, dental practice owner says, you know, Mel, this sounds great, I want to standardize my practice, I want to embrace a couple of these standards that are relevant and pertinent to my practice, what sort of benefits might they see if they go ahead and do that? We've spoken about some consistency, we've spoken about best practice, but what else might they see?
Well, for me personally, I run a business and we obviously have a system in place, which is compliant to ISO 9001 and a managing consultancy standard as well, actually. And that's given me back time because when I first started the business and I took on my first employee, I expected them to do things in the way that I'd done things in the past. And I was so wrong. In fact, I was actually horrified in the way that they delivered their service. But to be quite honest, it wasn't their fault. I hadn't made it clear on how I wanted our services to be delivered. So that was a game changer for me, just being able to get that information out of my head so that I could then employ my first employee. And that then enabled me to actually spend time with my family, because initially it was me running the business. But then now I've grown the business and that system has evolved. And now I've got employees training other new recruits as well on that system and that way of working. So I think giving back time. Also, I've built and sold to other businesses in the past. Blackmore, I've been running that for 15 years and I have got a plan to sell that business in about 8 years' time. In my experience, every time when I've created a business and then sold it, a lot of the value isn't just in the client base, but it's also in the system. It's a significant asset. So in terms of succession planning, I think that needs to be looked at as an asset to the organisation. But also, I think from an operational point of view, we do save a lot of time. It basically just standardises the way that we work as a business so that I have confidence that whenever we deliver a service to a client, it's always delivered to a high standard.
And that, of course, aids for client retention. It aids for your staff retention. It aids for, obviously, bottom line in that case as well.
Absolutely. So although we've been established for 15 years, many of our clients have been with us for over 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Many of our employees have been with us for over 10 years. And that's because they're happy, they're comfortable. I'm talking about employees now. It's really clear what their roles and responsibilities are when they join our company. And for clients, because we've had career progression within the company, and so quite often it's quite difficult being able to move one client to another consultant because a relationship is there.
Yes,
I think that's true for any business where it's based on relationship.
Yes.
And so it could have been really challenging bringing another consultant in to take over that particular client. But because we all follow the same way of working, it was just seamless in terms of that transition from one consultant to another. So that's enabled us to grow as well and to make sure that our clients are always happy.
Fantastic. Mel, we've covered a fair bit of material today, and obviously there's a whole host of things that we could talk about. But what I wanted to try and do as we wrap things up is to distill a couple of key messages for our audience to take away as it relates to standards, as it relates to the benefits of going through that process. If you were to distill some words of wisdom into a couple of bullet points, and I know that's a hard thing to do because I'm asking you to condense 15 years of operational experience into a soundbite, and I know that's not fair, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What would be a couple of key takeaways you would want the audience to understand or to think about as they go on their day today?
I think the key thing is we're all on a journey of continual improvement. I'm mentioning that because that's at the heart of all of the ISO standards. So that's about continually developing your employees, your way of working, and continue improving the services that you provide your clients.
Fantastic. Ladies and gents, if you want to find out more about Blackmores, I'm going to really encourage you to do a couple of key things. I'm going to encourage you to head across to blackmoresuk.com and check out their website there. There's also a podcast, and as a fellow podcaster, it is incumbent upon me to recommend podcasts because I think podcasts are fun and a useful resource. And I've had a listen to Mel's podcast and it's great. There's some really practical and useful things there. But Mel, if people were heading across to your website and wanting to get more information around there, where would you direct them to? What would be the things or the resources you'd like to point people to on the website?
We've actually got a free ISO standards blueprint. Mm-hmm. So this in effect is a blueprint for everything that you need to consider if you're looking at planning, creating, launching, and getting certified if you wanted to go down the certification route. But it does have a lot of key points in there that you might want to consider, regardless of whether you go for certification or not. And this is all around about how you develop your business practice, ultimately. So that's available on a new website that we've got, because we've actually created a new membership portal that we've got government backing on. This is actually a game changer in our profession. So rather than providing services in person for our clients, obviously that mm-hmm. hasn't been possible during COVID. We've been working via Teams. But during that time, we've been really busy innovating and creating a membership platform. So all our knowledge and expertise is now actually online on a membership portal. So that's on the isologyhub.com. So that's where you can download the blueprint.
Great. So ladies and gents, I'd encourage you to grab a hold of that. I'm going to do that as soon as we get off this podcast and check it out. But Mel, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us, especially because it is just turning over 7 o'clock in the morning there. And I really appreciate you getting up so early, gulping down your cup of tea to come and talk to us. And you're amazing to be able to talk about standards at 6:30 in the morning. I think that's incredible. It speaks to your passion about the subject, which is obviously boundless. So thank you so much for coming to hang out with us today. I really appreciate you doing that for us.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.